1 Samuel chapter 9 and 10. There was a Benjaminite, a man of standing, whose name was Kish, son of Abiel, the son of Zerah, the son of Becherath, the son of Aphiah of Benjamin. Kish had a son named Saul, as handsome a young man as could be found anywhere in Israel, and he was a head taller than anyone else. Now the donkeys belonging to Saul's father, Kish, were lost, and Kish said to his son Saul, "Take one of the servants with you and go and look for the donkeys." So he passed through the hill of Ephraim and through the area around Shalisha, but they did not find them. They went into the district of Shalim, but the donkeys were not there. Then he passed through the territory of Benjamin, but they did not find them. When they reached the district of Zuph, Saul said to the servant who was with him, "Come, let's go back, or my father will stop thinking about the donkeys and start worrying about us." But the servant replied, "Look, in this town there is a man of God. He is highly respected, and everything he says comes true. Let's go there now. Perhaps he will tell us what way to take." Saul said to his servant, "If we go, what can we give the man? The food in our sacks is gone. We have no gift to take to the man of God. What do we have?" The servant answered him again. "Look," he said, "I have a quarter of a shekel of silver. I will give it to the man of God so that he will tell us what way to take." Formerly in Israel, if someone went to inquire of God, they would come, let us see the seer, because the prophet of today used to be called a seer. "Good," Saul said to his servant. "Come, let's go." So they set out for the town where the man of God was. As they were going up the hill to the town, they met some young women coming out to draw water, and they asked them, "Is the seer here?" "He is," they answered. "He's ahead of you. Hurry now. He has just come to our town today, for the people have a sacrifice at the high place. As soon as you enter the town, you will find him before he goes up to the high place to eat. The people will not begin eating until he comes, because he must bless the sacrifice. Afterwards, those who are invited will eat. Go up now. You should find him about this time." They went up to the town, and as they were entering it, there was Samuel coming towards them on his way up to the high place. Now the day before Saul came, the Lord had revealed this to Samuel. "About this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin. Anoint him ruler over my people Israel. He will deliver them from the hand of the Philistines. I have looked on my people, for their cry has reached me." When Samuel caught sight of Saul, the Lord said to him, "This is the man I spoke to you about. He will govern my people." Saul approached Samuel in the gateway and asked, "Would you please tell me where the seer's house is?" "I am the seer," Samuel replied. "Go up ahead of me to the high place, for today you will eat with me, and in the morning I will send you on your way and tell you all that is in your heart. As for the donkeys you lost 3 days ago, do not worry about them. They have been found. And to whom is all the desire of Israel turned, if not to you and your whole family line?" Saul answered, "But am I not a Benjaminite from the smallest tribe of Israel? And is not my clan the least of all the clans of the tribe of Benjamin? Why do you say such a thing to me?" Then Samuel brought Saul and his servant into the hall and seated them at the head of those who were invited, about 30 in number. Samuel said to the cook, "Bring the piece of meat I gave you, the one I told you to lay aside." So the cook took up the thigh with what was on it and set it in front of Saul. Samuel said, "Here is what has been kept for you. Eat, because it was set aside for you for this occasion from the time I said, 'I have invited guests.'" And Saul dined with Samuel that day. After they came down from the high place to the town, Samuel talked with Saul on the roof of his house. They rose about daybreak, and Samuel called to Saul on the roof, "Get ready, and I will send you on your way." When Saul got ready, he and Samuel went outside together. As they were going down to the edge of the town, Samuel said to Saul, "Tell the servant to go ahead of us." And the servant did so. "But you stay here for a while, so that I may give you a message from God." Then Samuel took a flask of olive oil and poured it on Saul's head and kissed him, saying, "Has not the Lord anointed you ruler of his inheritance? When you leave me today, you will meet two men near Rachel's tomb at Zelzah on the border of Benjamin. They will say to you, 'The donkeys you set out to look for have been found, and now your father has stopped thinking about them and is worried about you. He is asking, what shall I do about my son?' Then you will go on from there until you reach the great tea of Tabor. Three men going up to worship God at Bethel will meet you there. One will be carrying three young goats, another three loaves of bread, and another a skin of wine. They will greet you and offer you two loaves of bread, which you will accept from them. After that, you will go to a Gibeah of God, where there is a Philistine outpost. As you approach the town, you will meet a procession of prophets coming from the high place with lyres, tambourines, pipes and harps being played before them, and they will be prophesying. The Spirit of the Lord will come powerfully upon you, and you will prophesy with them, and you will be changed into a different person. Once these signs are fulfilled, do whatever your hand finds to do, for God is with you. Go down ahead of me to Gilgal. I will surely come down to you to sacrifice burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, but you must wait 7 days until I come to you and tell you what you are to do." As Saul turned to leave Samuel, God changed Saul's heart, and all these signs were fulfilled that day. When he and his servant arrived at Gibeah, a procession of prophets met him. The Spirit of God came powerfully upon him, and he joined in their prophesying. When all those who had formerly known him saw him prophesying with the prophets, they asked each other, "What is this that has happened to the son of Kish? Is Saul also among the prophets?" A man who lived there answered, "And who is their father?" So it became a saying, "Is Saul also among the prophets?" After Saul stopped prophesying, he went to the high place. Now Saul's uncle asked him and his servant, "Where have you been?" "Looking for the donkeys," he said. "And when we saw they were not to be found, we went to Samuel." Saul's uncle said, "Tell me what Samuel said to you." Saul replied, "He assured us that the donkeys would be found." But he did not tell his uncle what Samuel had said about the kingship.
Good morning, everyone. It's nice to see you. It's been a few weeks since we've been in Samuel, actually, because we had an all-age service last week, and then I think it was Tim the week before. So it's been a few weeks. And I don't remember where we left the story. But in Samuel chapter 8, you might remember, it was the chapter where the people decide that they want a king. And which in and of itself was a bad thing to want. But if you remember, that the problem was that they wanted a worldly king. They wanted somebody that would be a king like all of the nations around and about them. And despite warnings from Samuel in chapter 8 about what that king would do and what that would lead to, they still were insistent that they wanted this king. And finally, in verse 22 of chapter 8, the Lord answered and almost relents and says this, "Listen to them," he says to Samuel, "listen to them and give them a king." So chapter 8, God promises a king to the people. And just like in a good TV show, what happens in between chapter 8 and chapter 9, it immediately cuts to the next chapter of the story, the next bit of the story. And in what we've got in these verses here is God not promising a king, but God immediately moves on to choosing this king the people. And that's what we're going to look at today. And it's a tale, as you'll have gathered, full of detail. It's got lots and lots of detail in it, hasn't it? And you know, there's lots of verses that we went through. It's interesting, isn't it? In the Bible, sometimes there are really, really big, major things that happen in a very, very small number of words. So if you think about Genesis chapter 1, where God made the world, that's one chapter of all of that detail. Verse 16 always strikes me, where in verse 16 of chapter 1 it says, "He also made the stars." Five words to describe creating the whole of the universe. And that, in Genesis chapter 1, it leaves out an awful lot of detail. But here, it's the exact opposite, isn't it? God has seen fit to give us an awful lot of detail in these words as we read about how God is going to go about choosing this king. Again, and so that's not an accident. When the Bible is written like that, that's not an accident. It's there for us to learn from. And I hope that in the next few minutes, that's kind of what we're going to get into. This isn't accidental. Why is it that these words are written in this way? What is it that God is trying to tell us this morning? So and you will tell as well, it's a long passage. And, you know, it's nearly two chapters. And I do want to spend just a few minutes going back through the story and bringing out some of the events and the people that happened as we read through. So I want to first of all get a sense of kind of what is going on, so we understand just a bit more about what is going on. And then I think where I've been thinking this week is not just about the what of what God is doing, but I want to start to dwell a few minutes on the how. How is it that God goes about doing what he does? Okay, what about the what? Let's just rerun through the passage again so that we get it. We're introduced in verse 1 to this man called Saul. Handsome chap, head and shoulders above everyone else. And immediately we're supposed to think, this is a guy who, if you had 20 people in a line, this is the guy that you would expect to be a king. He's big, he's handsome, you know, you're naturally drawn to him. He looks like a leader. But we don't know much more about him other than his background was a good one and he was a handsome and looked like a leader. We're not taught anything about his character or anything like that. But we do know what his name is. And straight away in verse 1, we've got a clue about what God is doing in these verses. Because the name Saul comes from the word ask, or to ask. And what straight away we start off with is a wonderful play on words here. The name reveals that God is already starting to answer his people. Remember for chapter 8, they ask for a king. In chapter 9, verse 1, God says, he starts to send, "I ask" to them. So before we go through the story, because it does seem like really random, it does seem like there's a lot of random series of events, the name Saul straight away tells us that there is a plan here, that there's something going on, that God is working this out. But he's just a normal guy. Wakes up in the morning, has his cornflakes, whatever. What thought he was going to be a normal day, and oh, the donkeys have gone. And they're important, so they need to be found. So he's dispatched off by his dad with his servant to go and find them. And what follows is a wild donkey chase. Verse 3 and verse 4, they chase around the land, can't they? You can have an imagination in your mind about what it looks like, sort of peeking around and around, hill after hill, trying to find these donkeys. Ephraim, Shalisha, Shalim, Benjamin, no joy. I think it's 3 days later they get to Zuph. And Saul at that point is ready to jack it in. They've got no more food. They've come to the end of it. And he says, right, let's jack it in because my dad will start to wonder where I am. And it's just at this point that the servant enters the stage, doesn't he? And he says, hang on just a minute. Let's not go back yet. Let's just wait. Over there, there's a town and I think there's a man of God in there. Perhaps we should go over there. And before we jack it in, maybe he can help. Maybe he will help us find these donkeys. But then there's another problem, that they don't have enough money. If you went to see a prophet, you need to take some money to pay him for his work. And they had, and Saul says, well, I've got no money left. We're all out. But the servant said, no, there's half a shekel here. Let's go. And so he persists. He knows that God, he knows that he wants to seek God to try and resolve this issue. So, a wild donkey chase, and then they get to the town, and then there's another random event that some girls just happen to come at that point to draw water from the well. And so Saul and his servant ask, you know, is the prophet around? Is he here? And they say, aren't you lucky? Do you know what? It just so happens today, he's only here for one day only, but the man of God is here. Just rush into town, you'll find him. He's not, you know, you will find him. He's going to eat later, but, you know, you go into town and you'll find him. Already you see that this sort of slightly wacky story is, there's lots of random things that have happened in quite a short period of time. What a lot of coincidences even now to get to this point. But remember at the start, God is doing something. God has already signaled that he's doing something here. And none of this is a surprise to Samuel. In verse 15, it says this, that actually, none of this is a surprise to Samuel, and it isn't a surprise to God, what is going on. Verse 15 says, now the day before Saul had come to this town, the Lord had revealed this to Samuel. He said, about this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin. Anoint him to rule over my people Israel. He will deliver them from the hand of the Philistines. I have looked on my people, for their cry has reached me. God, the day before, reveals to Samuel what his plan is. That this is the man who's going to be the leader. This is the one who's going to defend them from the Philistines. You see, between all the random events that are going on, again, in verse 15, we're told, no, this is not random at all. God couldn't be clearer, could he, about what is going on, what he's trying to do. But we're not done with the chance meetings. Saul just so happens to go into the town and approach a random guy and go, do you know where the prophet is? And the random guy happens to be that very prophet. And Samuel says, yes, God had told Samuel that this guy that would come to him was the Benjaminite, the guy who had been chosen. And then to sort of complete this bit of the story, as you can see there, that Samuel tells Saul that the donkeys are safe and invites him to come and stay. So they eat together and then they stay together overnight. And then at the end of that night, in the morning, when they get to leave, Saul says to Samuel, just hold back a minute, I've got something to tell you. And he talks to Saul, and he takes some oil, and he anoints him. And he says, yes, you are the leader. Are you still with me? I don't know whether, I hope you are, I hope you can follow that to this point in time. That's quite a belt through, isn't it? It's quite a belt through a lot of verses in the Bible. And we need to take a bit of a breath. Can you imagine how that felt for Saul? He was a guy, okay, he was a handsome chap and all of that, but he was just minding his own business, working with his dad, and then here we are, probably, I don't know, less than a week later, and all of a sudden this guy has anointed him and told him he's going to be king. I think we could cut Saul a bit of slack here. If he didn't understand, he didn't ask for this, he didn't understand it, he wasn't expecting it. And verse 21 shows that he wasn't. He says, even when he sort of starts to talk to Samuel, he says, am I not a Benjaminite? I'm from the smallest tribe of Israel. I'm of the smallest clan of the smallest tribe of Israel. What gives? Why have you chosen me? I'm not the man. Surely I'm not the man that you want. It's a pretty big claim after all, isn't it, to say you are now going to be the king. And you couldn't blame Saul for being just completely bamboozled by the whole thing, frankly. Which brings us to our last series of kind of apparently random and unconnected events. As it happens in biblical prophecy, what happens is it not only just the word that the prophet says, that Samuel says, but there's a sign which accompanies it, which goes along with it. And there are three things, three clear, unambiguous things that clearly confirm what Samuel is saying is true. So that Saul, from his kind of dazed state, can know for sure that what Samuel is telling him is true. And if you're still with me, then it's at the start of chapter 10 there, where he goes through those three signs. Firstly, he says, on the way home by Rachel's tomb, you'll meet two guys. They will just happen to be there, and they will tell you that the donkeys are safe, and they will talk, and they'll have spoken to your father. Secondly, you'll go further on, and you'll come to Tabor, and then I love this. There'll be three men. One will have three goats. One will have three loaves of bread. One will have a skin of wine. And one of those guys will give you two loaves of bread. Not three, not one. Won't give you a goat, won't give you the wine. He'll give you two loaves of bread. And the third sign is he said it will go to Gibeah, and then there'll be a profession. I knew I wouldn't say this. Every time I've practiced it, I can't say. Procession of prophets going on. And he says you'll join in, and the Spirit of God will come on you, and you will prophesy. They're so intricate, aren't they, those things? They're so specific. You can't... clearly they are of God. Clearly they could unambiguously say that they have happened. They've come true. And finally, you'll be pleased to know that this is where I stop. We've read on to verse 16, but I'm going to stop at verse 9. And finally at verse 9, it says, As Saul turned to leave Samuel, God changed Saul's heart. He understood that these things were real. And actually, at the end of verse 9, all these signs were fulfilled in that day. God really had been at work through this story. And at the end of the story, you get to a point where he really had chosen a new king. What a story that is. What colour is in there? What detail is in there? What intricacy? And frankly, what oddness there is in there. There's so much like weirdness, really. And can you see the difference between what to our eyes and to what to Saul's eyes must have been completely random set of events from Saul's eyes? That there was all just this random stuff going on that must have been completely perplexing. But if you step back and look at it from God's eyes, from God's perspective, there is a completely different tale there, isn't there? There's a completely different story. Because from God's eyes, this was all completely planned. And what God was doing all the way through was leading Saul through the outworking of his will to fulfill his promise to Israel. Can you see the difference between when you look at through things from our eyes and the events that happen around us the way we think about them and the way that things happen when we think about how God looks on them? And my mind has really been focusing, as you can probably tell this week, on the randomness of all of these things happening. Were they just coincidence? Were they just chance? Well, look, as I said, clearly not. It's the deliberate and planned outworking of God's providence and his purpose in the lives of his people. Why did the donkeys go missing? Why was it that that servant was chosen? What caused him to be brave at that point? How come it just happened to be that Saul was in that town as they went along? Why was it that the women came out just at that point to collect water? Why was it that it was Samuel that Saul just happened to come and see when he was in that town? What on the way back home again, what was it that caused those two men to just be by Rachel's tomb just as Saul and his servant were passing by on the way home? And how come the guys with the food and the goats would give two loaves, not just one. Surely this is a wonderful example to us of a sovereign God whose purposes will not be stopped, but who uses people and he uses events to fulfill his purpose. That's really the point, that he uses people and he uses events to fulfill that will, that purpose of his, that will not be stopped by anything. These aren't random. They're not chance happenings. God had planned every single step of this story. And I guess the point is that this isn't just a one-off event. This isn't just for Saul. Throughout the Bible and throughout history, throughout your life and throughout my life, God is doing exactly the same thing. Ordering and ordaining and circumstances which will fulfill his will, but working through people and events so that that could happen. And God is guiding you and me. The Bible is full of verses that talk about God being with us in our steps, ordering our steps. Proverbs 9 says this: in their hearts humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps. Psalm 23, which you'll know: he leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Proverbs 3:6: in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. There are loads, but Isaiah 48: I am the Lord your God, who teaches you what is best for you, who directs you in the way you should go. He was directing Saul. And he was directing us today. The Bible uses the language of paths and roads. And there's a really good illustration of Saul, isn't it? He was directed actually to the places that he was going to go and the people that he was going to meet. And that's a really good sort of thing for us to think about when we think about how God guides us in our lives. It's around the paths that we go, the direction that he's going to take us. Through his word and by his spirit, through communion with him, we get to know not just about God, but we live with God, don't we? We walk with him. And as he applies his word to us, as we wrestle with those things in our life, as we seek his will, we seek his face through prayer, that we're given this sense, aren't we, that he's leading us, he's prompting us everywhere we go. We've got different ages here this morning, haven't we? And I guess one of the things I was reflecting on is when I was sort of a teenager and in my 20s, it was a question that I used to grapple with a lot. And I'm sure everyone sort of goes through this, don't they? Perhaps when you're at university or something like that, you start to ask the big questions. That if God really guides me, if he's really leading me, well, where am I going to go? If you're a believer, as a young believer, you know, if God orders my steps, where am I going to go? What job should I do? Where should I live? That old favourite, whom shall I marry? Those questions are the right questions to ask. And if you're in that situation and thinking about some of those things, it's really important to know that God orders your steps. God is planning and has a purpose for your life. And you can seek his face and he will reveal that to you. But perhaps something as we get more settled, get more middle-aged, get more old-aged, I don't know, whatever it is, that perhaps you don't face those choices in your life anymore. And perhaps you think, well, actually, God is done with leading me because he's led me to a point where I've, you know, got a house and a mortgage and a car and all of those kind of things. But is that right? I've been really challenged this week to think about, you know, in my living relationship with God, am I open to him leading me? Do I still think God is leading me? Our relationship with God isn't cold and distant and formal. It's a living relationship. So we should be looking, not just for the incidental details, but for the big picture of what he is leading us through, individually and I think as a church as well. I wonder whether perhaps because we're sort of conservative and slightly afraid of the wacky stuff, that we don't seek God's spirit. We don't seek to see his work clearly in our lives as much as we should. Perhaps I'm only seeing donkeys. What do I mean by that? Well, Saul, quite understandably, he was perhaps concerned about the donkeys. He was concerned about the things that were the day-to-day stuff that were straight in front of his face. And you can understand that because God hadn't revealed to him what the plan was. But we can be a bit like that ourselves, I think. We can worry about the day-to-day stuff. We bring that to God. But we kind of lose the idea and the vision that God is working his purpose out. That there's another angle to this. That what seems sort of the big things to us, actually God has got a much bigger view about what is going on. Am I looking and expecting him to lead me? Am I open to where that might be in my life? With hindsight in this passage, it's a wonderful example of, actually, if you step back, there's so much more to this than we thought. Seemingly random events work together to a much bigger picture, and we can see now what, in a much broader canvas, what Saul, or God had for Saul to do. So that's one thing that's been really encouraging and been on my mind this week, that God leads and guides his people. It's clear as day in here that God is working his purposes out. And we should look for that in lives. That applies to us too. We should be open and we should look for how God is going to work. And there's a second point that I think was really, really encouraging to me as I sort of was thinking about this. What we have here would be unheard of today. It's the equivalent of Prince George being anointed king in a pub car park. It just wouldn't happen, would it? That there's this random guy off the street that's plucked from nowhere and in quite a secret way is anointed king by a prophet. And actually, as it goes on to say, he doesn't tell anybody about it. There's no pomp, there's no ceremony or anything like that. Surely we'd expect to happen with a big fanfare, but it doesn't. God uses small things. God uses these random series of events to bring about his purpose. And often we want to see God in the big things, don't we? We want to see God, big, powerful churches and dynamic leaders. So that's how we feel that God is at work and that there's something going on. But that can make us feel really irrelevant, can't it? It's not about me or my gifts. I've got no qualifications. I can't talk well. I just do a normal job. I'm not from anywhere special. God's plan isn't for people like me. But what a brilliant encouragement these verses are to us. What we see isn't some big display of faith, particularly, some wonderful bravery or gallantry from anybody. No, it's just normal people doing what appears to be normal things, but being used greatly by God in his purposes. Think about that servant. He doesn't really say anything sort of massively sort of significant, does he? But he obviously has just a small amount of faith to say, I think God might be the answer and I think he might be over there. And then he had the courage to follow through on that. What a spur this should be for us. What an amazing thing that God doesn't just guide our steps, but he uses people and events. He uses us and he uses our lives to bring about his will, to encourage us, to show us the way. I don't know whether you think of yourself as much of an evangelist. I certainly don't. But this is the example that came to my head. There's only been one time in my life where where anything that I've said that I know of has had any impact on somebody coming to Christ. And it happened in my early 20s, and I was depressed clinically. I was going through a rough time. I wasn't well, and I certainly wasn't very cheerful. A friend had come to say that he wanted to come stay for the weekend, and it was only politeness meant that I didn't cancel it. And I can't imagine I was much of a laugh, to be honest. And we went for a walk, and I can't remember what I said. I can't remember the context of it. I just don't know. But there was just something I said in that conversation which set off something in his mind, which was part of the series of events that sort of soon after, you know, meant that he could come forward and publicly say that he was a believer. I've no idea what I said. And you don't have any idea what the impact that you might have on others, on non-Christians, when God perhaps used you to do something that seems really insignificant, that might be really, really significant in someone's life. Within the church, to encourage a brother or sister with a phone call or a chat, or who knows, even just opening the door and smiling to someone. You don't know how God is going to use that. God uses his people and events in ways that we will never know this side of eternity. So be encouraged by this passage. Be encouraged by the apparent randomness. Be encouraged by the series of events that seem to have no kind of correlation at all. But actually, when you step back, you see that God is at work. Because that is who he is today. He's showing, I think, he's in this passage, a wonderful story that shows us his will and the way he guides in an amazing way, we can be encouraged by that, how he uses ordinary people and ordinary events to fulfill that purpose. And so we should massively be encouraged. He's showing his great sovereignty over everything, that what he purposes will come to pass. These events aren't random. There's no randomness here at all. He preordained them to take place. And he uses us humans with our free will, yes, but he so coordinates these events to achieve what he wishes. And God is fulfilling his purpose and promise to his people. Remember, he said he would give them a king, and so he does. He's showing his love and his grace because the people don't deserve anything from him. But he in his mercy, he allows Saul to become king. He identifies Saul to become king. And actually, he will be strong in battle. He will defeat the Philistines. But Samuel's prophecy will come true. Saul will act wickedly, and they will wish that they hadn't asked for a king like that. God, in his sovereignty, is allowing the people to have the king that they want in this wonderful way, in order that actually, ultimately, that they might learn a painful lesson, which is the king that you want isn't actually the king that you think you want. And ultimately, this king, Saul, will come and he will go. There will be a successor, a good king, David, who will rule wisely and well, a man after God's own heart. And of course, God's plan and purpose will continue to work in this way, all the way through the Old Testament, through people and through events, to fulfill his purpose. Until ultimately, of course, the ultimate king bursts onto the scene when King Jesus is revealed. But God is still at work today. That's kind of my point, isn't it? That's where I've been trying to get to, that this isn't a one-off, standalone example of how God used to do things. God is still at work through his people today, using seemingly random circumstances and normal people like you and me to bring about his will and to bring many to glory to him, to bring glory to his name and to bring in his everlasting kingdom. What a wonderful job that we have as his people. What a wonderful privilege to serve the Lord in this way. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we do thank you for your word. We thank you that these series of seemingly random things are not random to you at all. And that whatever happens in our lives, there's nothing happens that you don't know about. We thank you that you lead us, that you don't leave us to our own devices, but you love us and you walk with us and you show us the way. Help us to seek that way in our lives and together as a church. And we thank you, Lord, that you work through clay pots. You work through people like us to fulfil your work. And we pray that you would encourage us in that work, because you are gracious and that you love us. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.